Hello and welcome to The Bottom Line. This podcast examines the everyday business and finance issues faced by closely held and private businesses. We hope to provide you with news you can use in what we like to think of as a jargon-free zone. I'm your host, Dave Plasko, and with us is Tim Schuster, a manager in Eisner Amper's Private Business Services Group. In this episode, we'll discuss how you can finance the improvement or expansion of your business through SBA loans. Nice to see you, Tim.
Dave, it is a pleasure to see you as well.
So, Tim, first off, tell us the difference between SBA, or Small Business Administration loans, and traditional commercial loans, which we'll save for another day.
Yeah, that's fine. Not a problem. So, just to the listeners out there, anytime I say SBA, that's going to stand for Small Business Administration, just so you guys are aware, because I'm going to say that a lot. So, actually, the SBA really doesn't make a loan. You know, however, it does guarantee the bulk of the loan. Be it from a bank, a credit union, an alternative lender, or some other, this decreases the risk to the lender and thus makes it more likely for a business to approve for an SBA loan. In short, it increases access to capital, which is what every business needs in order to grow.
Sure. So there are several types of SBA loans, correct?
Yes. Honestly, there are a lot. So I'll kind of go through a list of SBA loans here that I've compiled for our conversation here today. So the first one that comes to mind and probably the most common one is SBA 7A.
Okay.
This one is for working capital, fixed assets, and debt refinancing, and that's up to about $5 million. There's a micro loan, and as you can tell, it's micro, so it's going to be small. That's up to about $50,000, and the maximum term is 6 years. This is used predominantly for working capital or fixed assets, and this also cannot be used for to purchase real estate or pay an existing debt. I'll be completely honest. I don't know what real estate you can even get for $50,000 anymore this day and age, but that is a stipulation in the agreement. SBA 504, this is a long-term fixed-rate financing for equipment and real estate. The maximum 504 portion is $5.5 million for manufacturers and green projects. So the green projects is there's going to be a saving about 10% and reduction of carbon emissions. So there is a stipulation for anything that's under the, I'm going to use quote-unquote, green umbrella. And all other projects of the maximum under the 504 are about $5 million. So the typical deal for, I want to say, for an SBA 504 is about $12.5 million roughly. So just something to keep in mind when you're looking for a loan in, of that size.
Okay.
Disaster, we actually briefly spoke about this in a prior podcast. And the disaster is low interest and covers business assets that were damaged or destroyed in a declared disaster. So anything that you've been hearing recently with the hurricane relief efforts in Houston, you know, in Texas, or even actually, I think most recently there's an issue with Greece, not that this is going to impact them, but, you know, there is loans that you can take out in order to recover, and they are extremely affordable and low interest for the consumer. And that's the loan itself is usually typically up to about $2 million. CAP lines, there are several lines of credit programs to meet short-term and seasonal working capital needs. There's four types, and max term are about 10 years, and they're also about $5 million.
Okay.
Export is, you know, expand any sort of exporting activities. You know, this is engaging in international transactions and enter into new foreign markets.
Mm-hmm.
There are three different types, international trade, EPWC, and Export Express. And this is up to about 25 years and $5 million.
Okay. And it's my understanding, too, that there are some derivatives of these loans, some subsets, such as loans for veterans and so on.
Of course. Absolutely. Yes, there are. Correct.
Now, we stated earlier that the SBA doesn't make the loan, but do the lenders look at any different criteria when they're looking at loan parameters, or are they looking at the traditional things that they usually look at?
Oh, of course. So, you know, the bank will ultimately make the decision, but it will also look at, you know, traditional loan parameters such as financial statements, sales tax data, income tax returns, collateral, credit scores, and any history of borrowing or bankruptcy. I mean, it's almost as if you're applying for any other loan that you would need. You need to fill out those sheets that come from the bank, looking for your personal financial information. Same exact concept.
Okay.
You know, the SBA has two major requirements. You have to have a net worth of $15 million or less, and the applicant must have a two-year average net income of $5 million or less. Again, this is for small businesses. They're looking for a very niche market when they come to this stuff.
Yep. Okay. So what's the role of the business advisor here?
A business advisor, you know, such as myself, we can help in determining the need for a loan, establishing which type would be the best fit. We can help expedite the paperwork involved in applying for an SBA loan and also implementing the loan and assessing the effectiveness. Because if we go through this process and the loan isn't working, you know, let's try something else. You might realize that a micro loan, you might have thought you needed a micro loan, and that's too small in nature. So you actually need to get a larger loan. So this is where actually, honestly, your business advisor is going to be your most trusted person when it comes to this.
Okay.
So you just want to make sure you keep them in a loop on any of this process.
Okay, good, good. Well, you know what time it is, Tim. It's our listeners just can't get enough of them. It's time for your New Jersey Historical Society fun fact.
Oh, absolutely. I think everyone's going to love this one because this is a hotly debated subject that's been going on probably since the 1800s, actually.
Okay.
So where is the Statue of Liberty located? You know, New Yorkers say it's in New York, mm-hmm. and New Jersey say it's in New Jersey. It's a hotly contested item here. So what I did is a little bit of digging. So maybe we can get a little bit of a resolution to this.
Okay.
So the land on which the statue stands is actually owned by New York. But the water surrounding the statue is actually located in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Hmm.
So how do we actually come up to an answer to say where it is located? I dug a little further deeper and realized and said, well, what if we look at a citizenship exam? On the citizenship exam, acceptable answers for where the statue are located are New York, near New York City, or New Jersey. So there,
okay.
It's shared.
So we're
going to
straddle
straddling the fence.
We're not going to pick one.
We're
okay.
olive branching this.
Right,
that's the plan.
All right, we want to keep the peace between the great state of New York and great state of New Jersey.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Tim, thanks for this valuable information.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening to The Bottom Line as part of the Eisner Amper podcast series. If you have any questions or there's a topic you'd like us to cover, email us at contact@eisneramper.com. Visit EisnerAmper.com for more information on this and a host of other topics, and join us for our next Eisner Amper podcast when we get down to business.